now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. This is a special edition where we've cleared away both Jonesy and Lawrence so there's room for other voices to be heard. That's largely because I want to do some talking again. That's me, Owen Slott. But mainly because we want to talk French rugby, because Europe is so dominated by French rugby, and because we got one of the absolute authorities on the subject with us in Ben Kayser. Ben can be found on God knows how many different TV and radio platforms. He also has his own excellent rugby podcast called Le French Rugby Podcast. Though don't be fooled, because it is in English. So if you do like the sound of him here, then you can also go and follow him there as well. Ben's one of those guys who is fast becoming as well known for his broadcasting as he was for the fact that he was pretty decent on the pitch too. For those who need a catch up and think he's just a TV face now, Ben won 47 France caps and played for some of the great teams, Stade Francais, Leicester, Castres, and 8 seasons at Clermont. So, Ben, great to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me. Absolute pleasure. Listen, I've had a smile on my face all weekend. Things are looking good. I'm holding my passport closer to my chest than ever, so I'm very pleased.
You must be close to having a UK passport now, aren't you? I mean, you're almost permanently on our TVs.
Yeah, so I moved. I met my wife, who's originally from Kent, when I played in Leicester. She was studying there. And after that, she moved to France with me. We have 2 little girls that after 11 years in France, we thought we'd take back on the other side of the channel to go into some fantastic English schools. So we're based in Tunbridge Wells now. So since last August, I'm back in the UK.
Oh, right, brilliant! So we have captured you permanently. Then is that like playing for the A team of a nation? If you're living in Tunbridge Wells, then you must now be properly English. Brilliant. Well done. We also have an old favourite, Chris Jones, back to join us to give us some authority and some levity. And great to have you back again, Chris. You're all well?
Very well. I'm very impressed that Ben is now either a man of Kent or a Kentish man. We have to quiz him now to find out which one he is. But great to know that we may have left Europe, but we've actually stolen a bit of Europe to keep with us. Great to have you in our country, Ben. Fantastic.
Thank you.
We all watched both the European finals, and the narrative is, as I suggested, pretty French, with an all French Heineken Cup final, which Toulouse won, and then the very close and exciting game on Friday night in the Challenge Cup with Montpellier just pipped Leicester. Let's just start talking about what we saw, because you could go away from watching the final on Saturday and some of the knockout games leading up to that with these sort of giant in both sense of the word French teams, and go, well, hang on a sec, they might be winning, but they're not that. They're not that easy on the eye. I would just like to lance that a little bit. And if anyone read Stuart Barnes's column in the Times this morning, he did that. He was talking about finals rugby and how we shouldn't be too bothered about the level of entertainment, because it's all about winning. But Chris, what's your takeaway on what you're thinking about French rugby and what it looks like?
I think that point about winning finals, and Ben knows about this, is really important when you're looking at the Toulouse halfbacks, Entemac and Dupont, because, you know, learning to win finals is really important. important as part of their development. And we know that they are multi-talented. And we know DuPont is the European Player of the Year and was by a country mile. Yeah, but he would have faced problems on Saturday in that final, which he's going to store away going on to 2023. And this is a really important development for these younger players because, you know, France are the hosts. They've got a wonderful chance of winning the World Cup. But, you know, as we know from the Saracens players have talked about this, about the difficulties they had to win their first European title, you sometimes have to go back to go forward. And, you know, not everything went right in those finals, either for Montpellier or for La Rochelle and Toulouse. And it was about problem solving. And I thought at times that they didn't get it right. And we had a lot of muddled play and there was some really poor decision making. But these guys are going to sit down now and they will go through those matches with a fine tooth comb. And when you've got someone like Ron O'Gara helping La Rochelle, their players are also going to realize that they made some significant mistakes. And you could probably say that Ronan made a big mistake in picking Levani in the first place because he patently wasn't fit. And then he went and got himself sent off and changed the whole dynamic of that final. But I don't know what Ben thinks about the mixture between non-French players and French players seems better now because you're getting these good young French players coming through alongside some of the best players in the world, rather than having, as we know with Toulon at that point, where it was hired help, which came in to win a title. I don't know if you agree, Ben. Do you think the balance is better now?
I wouldn't necessarily agree on the. It's not an idea of balance. I think the new generation of young French at the moment are not just good; they're world class, and that's the whole different differentiator. But to go back to the quality of the games, let's face it: we didn't see two quality games, whether it's the Challenge Cup or the Champions Cup, in terms of rugby that was actually produced. Fair enough, but I think we're all pretty adamant that we were so delighted to see Twickenham with 10,000 people full. That was already pretty good. We're still delighted to see those games just literally happening. There's always an uncertainty of the tournament coming, you know, to its end. There's been moments of which that I think we forget about how crazy the last 24 months have been, when, you know, Exeter lost by 20 by defense, bonus point for Toulouse away. So you didn't really see the challenges that you wanted. In the end, we still got Montpellier and Leicester in the Challenge Cup final, two clubs who really, really cared about the competition. So I was in Bath when Montpellier defending about 75 consecutive phases of pick and go by Bath, 2 centimeters away from their line. And that was André Pollard, you know, a World Cup winner. It was Kobus Reinach, a World Cup winner. It was Guillaume Girardot with Mohamed Awa. So exactly what you said about that, the mix of sort of internationals and quality French together. But they didn't think about that. They thought about, let's save and do the Montpellier jersey proud. And they did that. So a very average final, yes. But the team who wanted it the most. Now, if you base yourself on Toulouse, La Rochelle for the Champions Cup final, again, frustrating. Maybe we would have wanted to see a non-French just for the rugby fans in general. If you forget that you're from La Rochelle or Toulouse, okay. But it's still the two teams that produced overall, over the whole competition, the most explosive, attack-orientated, powerful and super dominant sort of displays. So in the end, I think both teams deserve to be there and Toulouse deserve to win it as a whole. And again, it's about context. I think what people seem to forget is that you look at Dupont and Ntamack and all those guys, of course, they're just outstanding. But Toulouse is a big, strong unit, is a big unity of players. Julien Marchand, the captain, was out, suspended after the semi. That was a huge blow. Charlie Fahamouina knows that if he drops, it was Ainu, which is a 23-year-old Samoan American international who plays Lucid normally, who was on the bench to be tighted for a Champions Cup final. So their depth in the squad is limited to absolutely nothing. Zach Holmes was already replacing Sofiane Guitoun in the center, who then got replaced by Malia, who played 4 games in top 14 and lost every single one of them because he only played the games that Toulouse, you know, sort of rotated their squad in. So Johan Huger is out. You know, Lucas Tauzin, I don't know if you remember this big, strong winger or whatever, who was going to be the revelation, was out too. They were really, really stretched thin. So I think that's what you saw. You saw a Toulouse team who were like, listen, let's play just with a little bit of safety. Let's just keep the handbrake on because the star is for us. We want it irrespective of even if we play against nature, right? And whereas you had La Rochelle who was like, what's going to be the impact of John O'Gibbs leaving? How long is Will Skelton going to play at this level? How long is Victor Vito going to stand at this level? We don't know. So they have more that mentality of saying, let's just play what's in front of us, seize the opportunity. Are we going to win 10 or one in the next 100 years? We don't know, but at least let's try to win this one. And that's really what you saw. But you also saw a lack of experience of La Rochelle. Points under the sticks, you take them. You don't go for the scrum again. That's my personal view. Obviously, Levani Botia, maybe you guys don't see him week in, week out. But what he did against Max Médard, if you just take 10 centimeters off in the height of that tackle, it's a game-changing tackle. You kill one of the Toulouse players. It's an absolute uppercut of a punch. And you put the whole team down on the floor and everybody. And that's what he does. He bullies people and gives his body and soul and heart for this La Rochelle team. So it's that lack of experience. I don't know if Ronaldo should have picked him or not. Yes or no. He's so important. He's so influential. He can basically win a game sort of in the spirit almost on his own, that I think you had to take a risk. So it was disappointing, yes, but the Challenge Cup final, I think the team who wanted the most won. And Champions Cup final, I think the team who overall deserved it the most won. And as long as it sticks, sort of, nobody robs anything, I'm pretty happy with it.
Ben, can we just go back to your description of that tackle? Did you call it an uppercut? And if you did, can you give us your pronunciation again? Because I loved it.
It's one of those, you know, when somebody does something on the field that's more than just a single play, and I think that uppercut, whatever I said, is such a powerful tackle that it's almost like if the whole Toulouse team is being tackled at the same time, that domino effect, you know, you almost feel the hit with your teammate, and so that's why it's just so impressive.
No, I just preferred your first version, which was I think it was uppercut.
Ben, don't you agree that it was a risk not worth taking in the final of the Heineken Cup when we are so hot, the officials are so hot on hits that end up hitting the face? I mean, he could have lowered his hit by another 10 centimetres
100%.
And still be 100%. On the pitch. And these are big key decisions made by big players.
No, but 100%. Now, is it down to Levani Botia to go to play against nature? Or is it down to a coach to try to, you know, pick the guys on the right occasion? I think it's a matter of La Rochelle knew that it was probably, I don't know how you want to put percentage, but it's like a 51-49 for them, right? Against them. So I think if La Rochelle played it safe, they didn't even stand a chance of winning. And I think that was their mindset. We might as well go full tilt and have zero regrets rather than, you know, try to play it safe and see if we can win by not playing our absolute best. And if you want to play your best and take a risk, you need to have Levani Botia there. You need to let Levani Botia do his thing. But like you said, he should have dropped his tackle for sure. To be honest, I'm actually happy that Max Médard is okay, because I thought he was going to be in trouble. I saw his head whacked at the back. He chopped him in half. I was sort of in and out from the side of the pitch up to a box to do some commentary for BT. And we were just outside when that hit happened. I thought that I heard some bones break. It was that hard. Like I've rarely seen such an impressive tackle, to be honest. The speed at which he went, not forget about the height, but the speed at the moment of impact was bone crushing. And so I'm happy that Max Médard is okay. Definitely those tackles can't happen. But then if you, you fast forward, 15 minutes later, I can't remember, there's another tackle, or it's Peter Aki, isn't it? Or there's another tackle that's really, really close. And it's barely a penalty. I'm like, guys, how do you expect players to actually, you know, properly sit down on a Monday and try to say, we're going to change our behaviors if you're talking millimeters that go from a red card to a simple penalty? I'm like, that's undoable.
Going back to the quality or the type of rugby we saw, and I introduced this question just reminding you that we can't watch the top 14 in England anymore. So the only rugby...
Unfortunately.
I mean that, but so the only rugby that I've been able to see from the French club sides is in Europe, and in the knockout rounds they've dominated, but they haven't played beautiful rugby. So can you tell me what you think French club rugby looks like at the moment back at home? And you've got a very vibrant, exciting top 14 competition just coming to a finish. I don't think what we've seen in Heineken Cup is representative of French club rugby particularly, but you've seen and you know far more.
You said exciting and vibrant top 14, and that's very kind of you. Unfortunately, top 14 is so stressful from time to time that the quality of rugby that's played isn't always up there. The economical impact of having all that money generated, it's self-proclaimed best premiership in the world, right? In terms of quality of rugby, it's not true. In terms of intensity, passion, devotion from the fans, economical, financial involvement of the owners, quality of players on the field, 100%, yes.
Our league here is self-proclaimed best league in the world as well. The premiership, yeah. Everyone believes that's the best league, but sorry, carry on.
When you see the quality sides going at it, and I have, like, I'll keep in mind a Clermont-Toulouse game that was 2 years ago for my final season. We ended up playing them in the final, but just like one of the last league games, when finally everybody's on the pitch, when the full Clermont side and the full Toulon side go at it, and if finished like 45-44, some extraordinary game with some attacking pace absolutely everywhere. Chelsea and Kobe, you know, bouncing back from Damien Penaud and vice versa. And it was one of those extraordinary moments. Unfortunately, top 14, that's pretty rare. Because for one, you rarely get the four sides going at it. There's a lot of rotation. There's so many games, basically, that they still play during Six Nations. And then the players need some rest. So basically, the internationals have to come in and out and will play a maximum of 15 games, probably, for their yeah. sides every year. And so the quality of rugby sometimes isn't there. But French rugby, as in its heart, in its soul, is based on passion, on physicality, on aggressivity. And I think that's what you saw against La Rochelle and Toulouse. They said, let's not take too many risks, but let's just give absolutely everything we've got in the tank in the ruck area, which, to be honest, I thought was an absolute mess. There could have been 700 penalties per ruck, to be honest. If you zoomed in to every contact, I mean, if you apply the law again of saying, you know, you can't hit on the joints, you can't hit on the head, you can't use an elbow. I was like, listen, so there's a guy's going to be sent off every ruck. And that's the way that we do it. So French rugby is getting better, is getting influenced by that new generation of the Damien Penaud, you know them, the Serin, Dupont, Entamac, Carbonel, Jalibert, Vakatawa, Fiku, all those guys. They get influenced by the fact that you can't, that physicality and physical dominance is never going to be enough, and that fast-paced rugby is rewarded. Ball in play is rewarded. And so that's where we're shifting. But heart and passion will always be in the middle. It'll be super interesting to see if those same two teams, Toulouse and La Rochelle, end up being in the top 14 final, which is very probable, very, very possible. And if the quality of rugby will be the same. I reckon it will be even more aggressive and even less rugby played.
Chris, in English rugby, for a while, we've had maybe a completely missense place of superiority in one regard. If you're comparing English versus French club rugby, that we have believed that English clubs are fitter, are best prepared than French clubs, and that French clubs are more based on heavyweights and physicality and less of the ball movement. That's like a cliche, which I think maybe was right 4 years ago. But I have been under the impression that that's changed, that has been changing, which I think is what you've been saying, Ben. Where do you stand on that, Chris?
I think that, you know, this young crop of French players that are coming through are demanding the ball and demanding the ability to impress their talent on things, which is great. But, you know, it is still based around this heavy bludgeon and. I was just very concerned at the end of that match that Luke Pearce, who, as Ben pointed out, had been looking at these car crashes that were the breakdowns all the match and then making decisions. In the last few minutes, I felt he sort of abdicated any responsibility and just let it go. He didn't seem to want to sort of make the big call because there were some very interesting things going on those final couple of rucks. Yeah. Where you could have actually stuck the old whistle in your mouth and said, hold on a minute, this is a key penalty I'm going to award here. And it seemed to get to him. I might be wrong in that. I don't know what you guys thought, but I just thought at the end, it was like, let's get this match over with now. It's pretty close. Let's get off the pitch. Because
so you're talking, you know, about the absolute, gone on with the any absolute last then, penalty.
Yeah. You could have looked at all those rucks and said, look, there's, you know, look at that going on. There could have been a decision. And quite honestly, could we have taken any more decisions or going upstairs? Because, you know, these matches now are going like 2 hours, 15 minutes. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same situation in France with the use of the TV match officials, Ben, but it's getting ridiculous.
No, it's 100% is. And to be honest, there was a really funny moment because, you know, how in Super Rugby, there's that captain challenge thing that they're trying to implement.
Yeah.
Because the stadiums are empty, you can hear absolutely everything. In France, the crowds are not back yet. Well, they're back from last week, 1,000 people, but it's still the numbers are not the same. So you can still hear everything. And I was watching the Clermont-Toulon game of 2 weeks ago. And there's a clear penalty in the ruck. Sébastien Vamaina, you know, a ball comes out, you don't know how. And Baptiste Serin, who's a nine from Toulon, start yelling and stuff. And you can hear all the chit-chat. And he asks for the video, which they then look at, because otherwise it wasn't given. And then they look at it and they give a penalty and a yellow card against Sébastien Vamaina. And after the game, the ref is like, no, it wasn't a captain's challenge. I had a doubt. Yeah. My fourth official was whispering to me in my ear that I'm looking at it. And it so happens that Baptiste Serin came at the same time. You know, it's like, oh, whatever. So yes, we do ask a lot of video because, again, the tension is sky high. So you imagine, forget about the crowds, but sometimes I'm a little bit ashamed of the behavior of the coaching staff on the side. You can't imagine you can't even grasp how desperate people are to win. There's the financial involvement, there's the pride, there's, you know, the fact that you always want to, that it's very competitive, that there's one that gets 0 to 9 can qualify for the top six, but then 7 to 13 can go down to second division. So it's very, very tense. Everybody's holding each other on pretty much a 4 points margin. So, you know, so 1 week you're saved, the other week you're doomed. And so every decision is super heavy. So the refs now, to try to back themselves with extra evidence, tend to use quite a lot of video.
Yeah, Chris, at the end of a European season, we like to stroke our chins and talk about the balance of power and which way the game's going. And clearly, if you want to take a message out of this last season, it's saying, well, the French teams are as dominant as they've ever been. They obviously won both competitions, had three of the four semi-finalists of the Heineken Cup. And that is that just this year? Is it a one-off? Or do you think that that is a reflection of where the European game is and where we're going to be for a while?
Look, it's good to see French teams delivering and not getting themselves whistled off the pitch and not showing us what they can do. And we've known that there is this potential for the French clubs to dominate. But let's remember who's not around at the moment. It's a North London team called Saracens, who are not going to be weak when they come back up, who are not going to be in for a while. But, they're missing from the European competition. And some of the best players in Europe were unable to play, which is, for their own faults. But, that's a dynamic which is normally a big part of recent Heineken Cups. And they weren't there. And, I think it's a great shame that we didn't see their best players also having a go in this competition, because it is the very, very best. And I know we all say, well, let's have a North v. South. Yeah, well, basically that means the Crusaders against anybody who wins up here. But can you imagine a Toulouse-Crusaders game at the moment? Yeah, one, where would you fit it in? But wouldn't it be just fantastic to see if the domination which New Zealand has just hammered Australia with in the Super Rugby matches between the two can be transferred into exactly what we think we've got here, which is at the moment, a French-dominated European scene with English clubs, really trying very hard. And I was very disappointed with Leinster. We've always thought that they were the number one team in Europe. Well, no, they're not the number one team in Europe, and they've got to come again. And again, that'll be interesting to see how they do that with some young players coming through. But at the moment, it's definitely pole position for the French. I'd love to see Toulouse versus the Crusaders. Ben, that would be, I'm sure you'd be commentating on it, Ben, but I think it'd be a fantastic match, wouldn't it?
I would adore to see it, to be honest. And I get asked this question quite a lot. What's the future of rugby? We talk about private equity coming into the game and obviously wanting to take things in different direction. There are people who are going to invest heavily, but to get a return on interest, because that's the nature of their business. They're not philanthropics. And so they're going to want to create things that don't exist. I was already sort of, it was mouth watering when I heard that the Lions store, was going to be canceled. You didn't know what was going on. And there was this whole potential Australian tournament where France, Australia, the Lions and South Africa, you remember when that idea was going to meet in Australia. So I was thinking, I'm going to see France play the Lions. That's history in the making. I would love to see that happen. I actually don't want the French to be invited in the British Irish Lions because it wouldn't make any sense. It's completely against nature. You don't want to force it. But I would be desperate to see the Lions, not only Tour France. Imagine that. I mean, that would be, everybody's getting excited about the World Cup 2023. Well, get the Lions to come to France and they will adore it, because there's the midweek games. So you can get the Lions against, Toulouse without Ntamack and Dupont and go over, whatever. So when something didn't exist and they were saying that in Australia we could create history, I was super excited. What scares the living life out of me is the bodies that are going to be left behind and buried back in Premiership and top 14 and all those moments where the pandemic hit and France said, we'll can the season. And now for Europe, they're like, no, we're not canning the season. Whatever happens, those games need to be played. Because basically you're almost putting an amount of money on a player's health. That's pretty much what happened. And I was with Philippe Saint-André in Bath when they won, and he was absolutely delighted. We're going to get a final in Twickenham. It's going to save our seasons. But it means we need to play 3 games in 8 days. And he was already, really scared of the impact they can have on his players. And so players can do it once. But you don't know if that doesn't mean that in 4, 5, 6 weeks they'll get seriously injured because your body does take a toll. So creating history, I would love to see Toulouse against Crusaders as a rugby fan, something that doesn't exist. It's already mouth-watering. And of course, that would be extraordinary. But what really scares the living life out of me is that I was already part of a rugby where there's too many games. And I really, really could not. I really struggled 2013, 14, 15, when I really played for the French team the whole time to go back and forth. I mean, November tests, when you play, there was in 2013, I think, when I started really starting, we played the All Blacks, Tonga in Le Havre, and then South Africa just to finish. Then the week after I played Toulon in Toulon for a qualifier, and then we went back-to-back Munster. I started all those games. I'll tell you what, after that, I wanted to retire for 6 months and take a sabbatical. My body was drenched. So it really is extremely, extremely hard. So I think the premierships are and never change it. What's the system that's in England, the system that's in France is club based. Absolutely. That's where we're proud. That's where the fans are. That's where we want. I want the specialness about Exeter, the specialness about Gloucester, the specialness about Leicester, the specialness about Saracens, and the same in France. Please let's cultivate that. That is our heart and soul. I adore European rugby. Right, I think it's those features that we all love because rugby is about. That's why Six Nations is so special. We love, the fact that Scotland is not Ireland, it's definitely not England, it's not Wales, it's completely different. But the same way that we are different, we're your neighbors, but we're properly different, and we like to cultivate that difference. That's the whole thing about rugby. We'll give banter before the game, we'll smash the living life out of each other for 18 minutes, and then we'll laugh about it and be good human beings. But then there's too many games. There's way too many games. So it really scares me.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, marketers, want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Now we're talking about physicality and too many games and the threat to the health of our athletes is probably a good time to mention Theo Brophy-Clues, isn't it?
Absolutely. Age of 24 years, that's all. Has to be forced to give up his career with London Irish. Very talented young back and too many concussions. And talking to John O'Ross at the moment, he's had 3 this season already. He's currently completing a period away from rugby. He's the captain of Sale. They're heading for the playoffs, and they believe they're going to win the title, and he wants to be part of that. But at the same time, he's been to see a neurosurgeon in Manchester, which said, yeah, if we continue playing. But he knows that three concussions is three too many. And yeah, quite rightly, at the age of 30, he's got to ask the question, how many years can I keep on doing this with the risk? He's got a young four-month-old daughter, and there are bigger issues out there. And Ben, I don't know, is it as big a problem in France?
It's absolutely huge. It's absolutely huge. I think hopefully it's starting to be in the awareness of all. We've seen some pretty horrendous videos of guys getting seriously hit and some pressure coming from, you know, on the side, above, beyond. What? You don't want to come back? You don't want to come back? So that for me is the main issue that needs to be addressed. I was part of a club where in ISM Clermont-Auvergne for the last 10 years where we were very much at the front foot of the research around concussions and doing a lot of different protocols and really trying to go the right way. And even that wasn't enough. You simply cannot get things perfectly. With the Jamie Cudmore, you know, sort of trial in the middle, we were very, very much in the midst of this. My only issue with this is that, and it might be, I hope it's not counterproductive, but the only way we're ever going to solve this is if players take the decisions. There is no doctor in the world who can tell you precisely, oh, you personally will be 2 weeks out and you will be 6 months. John O'Ross will go see 10 neurosurgeons. There'll be 9 of them who will tell him, mate, you really need to stop. And there's one of them who will believe in him. And so the player will believe and want to keep on going. It's always, everybody reacts differently to this thing. That's why it's so complicated. In Clermont, we started using the blood samples of, there's a protein that apparently that's generated by your brain whenever there's a collision, a protein S1000, I think it's called, or something like that. But everybody's levels tend to differ. And guys, in rugby, we all, you know, I get injured. Somebody tells me 6 weeks. I will go see the physio that tells me it's only 3 weeks. That's just the nature of the business. We want to be there faster and faster, faster. Coaches come down every morning. They're like, right, is Ben out for 10 weeks? Okay, we've got a semifinal in 8 weeks. You got to do it, mate. That's the type of pressure that the doctors are under. That's the type of pressure that the players are under. And that's the type of pressure that we all want to be under because that's part of professional sport. You never want to miss out, right? So as long as the players don't have some sort of stability financially, emotionally, life after rugby, I don't think they will ever be able to solve this issue. So if anything, I would be more investing into player welfare. Forget about the health, but about, you know, extra academic activities next to it. Leave rugby where it should be, which is an absolute passion, which is a sport, which is a love of the game, but not a necessity to live, not a financial, how do you say that, dependence from the players to it. And that's what I feel that it's like. The pressure needs to seriously come down to be able to switch your TV on or bring your kids to see Crusaders Toulouse and just enjoying this beautiful game for what it is, an extraordinary physical game where players need to rest and players cannot jeopardize anything about their health. And for me, you can't play around with the brain or the neck. These are the two only things. I mean, every rugby player in the world will be happy to limp for 50 years if they've won titles. They were happy to have a broken nose and some ugly ears and destroyed shoulders. But the neck and the brain, you just cannot play.
You sound almost, Ben, as if you're advocating a return to amateur rugby or semi-pro rugby, where, because as you're saying, as in many sports, once finance becomes a part of it, that brings a whole other pressure.
So not amateur, but you've hit it on the nail. I'm a big advocate of not semi-pro, but some sort of hybrid way. So I'll give you my example. I had a fantastic career, absolutely adored it. But after 2015, the World Cup in England, which personally I really didn't enjoy. There was loads of things that just didn't go the way that I wanted. I got called up for the French team after, but I saw Guillaume Girardot was the captain. I saw that my international window was over. And I've always, you know, kept in phase with my studies. I've had a few business sort of ventures on the side. And actually, the last 4 years of my career were the ones that I enjoyed absolutely by a mile the most, because the more I was doing away from rugby, the more I was enjoying my day to day in rugby. And everybody's like, Ben, what are you doing? Because, you know, careful, you're going to use too much energy because, you know, we need to train so much. And because this, because that. I know that the guys who on a Tuesday afternoon go and take a nap for 2 hours are the ones who don't play at the weekend. You just need to be cautious about what you do. But keeping rugby where it is, which was my absolute pleasure, But then putting it at, I called my rugby career my golden era, you know, is my parenthèse dorée. Don't you call that? But it was a bit surreal. Real life is a lot more complicated. And so when I had to take a decision for my neck, when I still had 2 years of contract down the line, I decided to retire because I was just going to take too much of a risk. And I was like, I'm not ready to take that risk. I'm 35 and they're telling me that 50, if I keep on going and have another surgery and stuff, I might have, you know, sort of problems in my fingers that will start moving on their own. At 50, I want to be playing tennis with my girls. What are you talking about? I'll still be a young man. You know, there's not even a question about it. So not only to save to make the decision making for players when in troubled times easier, do I want them to have stuff on the side? But also because I promise you, they will be better rugby players. If they can actually concentrate on and take rugby only for what it's for, they will come with a big old smile on their faces and actually deliver there. So the involvement and the bridge between sports and business is absolutely huge. Why do companies sponsor rugby? They love it. The values of rugby are there and they're real. But so I would love it if in a way that on the day off on the Thursday, if guys could just go work one day a week, you know, just do or study one day a week, but a full proper day a week. And that's part of their thing. You talk about salary cap. Well, I know that Saracens got pinged and they got taken, you know, hand in the cookie jar massively. Okay. But there's also the co-investments I thought was actually the best thing I ever heard. Do I want to, you know, to have Nigel Ray just as a president, or do I want to use Nigel Ray's business knowledge, which don't get me wrong, I think he knows a thing or two about, for the future welfare of those players? Please use them for that. Imagine if you do the same thing in France. Mohamed Altrad, the Montpellier president, was given the title of Entrepreneur of the Year, I think like 5 years, World Entrepreneur of the Year 5 years ago. He knows stuff about business. Jackie Lorenzetti is absolutely huge. Dr. Wild, you know, in Stade Français. Why not give those players an opportunity to actually seriously co-invest or, you know, have a business mind with that? I think that would be enormous. And that would probably force players to stay within the same clubs for longer rather than go chasing just that little extra buck. If you know that your family's happy, that you're after rugby sorted, then everybody's a win-win. So you can't go back to amateur. You can't do semi-pro, but 80-20, something like some sort of hybrid solution, I think for me is the future.
One of the great shames about this, what happened with Saracens, is that it clouded situations like the one that George Cruz has created, where together with Dominic Day, they have a fantastic business, which has just had a six-figure investment from a series of backers, including Jason Roy, the cricketer. You know, and he's enjoying his life in Japan, you know, winning, obviously, the top league title is fantastic. But he's also using that as an opportunity to look at opportunities of business in Japan and expanding this thing he's created. And he's talking to him, he's so alive with the opportunities, which is what I think, Benjamin, is what you're talking about, isn't it?
When we start playing sport as kids, it's a release at the end of a day at school or something, or it's a thing you look forward to at the weekend. And I think that there are many examples in professional rugby in England, increasingly so, where people are beginning to click onto what you're saying, Ben, that if you have a fuller life and your rugby is something you're looking forward to as a release from, I don't know, starting a family or having a business or whatever, then you go into it fresh and you're thrilled to get at it. Whereas if it's your be all and your end all, then it's what you're eating and living and sleeping, and your definition of whether you're being successful or whether you've had a good day or a good week all hangs on how you did at the weekend, and that's unhealthy. So I think that's a part of it. I think we're getting better at advising players that they should be have a broader view of the world, but I think especially young players struggle with that because they want to get to the top as fast as they can. Anyway, listen, I just want to rewind because I think there's still quite a lot on France that we've got to talk about since we've got Ben here. But Ben, what's your view on French dominance in Europe? Is it do you think this year is reflective of where we are? Do you see it being sustained? And the fact is, we're going to have South Africans in there probably in two seasons' time. So that'll shake it up a bit.
Well, that's a whole different discussion. I hope that's not carved in stone and definite, that they can still, you know, overthink this. But so I agree with the point that that Chris made about the absence of Saracens. It's only fair to say that if they're there, things could be different. But it's also the first year that I've always had the privilege of being involved in French clubs that took the Champions Cup or European rugby extremely seriously, whether it's the challenge with Clermont or Champions Cup. It was always sort of the number one target. It's not the case everywhere. So it's the first year that Bordeaux seriously go at it. It's the first year that even Lyon, you know, tried to go seriously at it. Apart from, it took a long time for Racing to get there. But other than Toulouse and Clermont, who have always made a priority, and then Toulon in the big good old days, French clubs would always go full tilt for the first game. If you just so happened to lose the first one by 1 point, then it was game over, rotation.
Yeah.
So it's the first time that everybody is there. I mean, La Rochelle took it seriously. Is it down to John O'Gibbs and Ronan O'Gara? Absolutely. And they got the players to buy into it and to fully go at it. So it's a reflection of two things. Of firstly, finally, European rugby being a main target for all French clubs. Secondly, with players, individual players and individual team just very, very hot at the moment. And the icing on the cake is the fact that Saracens weren't there.
Ben, can I ask you about Stade? Because, you know, they were dead, you know, winning challenge, being challenged cup finals and that, but you know, they're such a fantastic name and such a strong brand and image for rugby. Are they on the way back? Are things right there? Because many things went wrong, didn't they, at the same time?
Absolutely. A decade of problematic institutional problems that honestly were... It's a bit like the 2011 World Cup final for France. In French, we have an expression to say, c'est l'arbre qui cache la forêt. It's the tree that hides the forest. And actually, the 2011 final against New Zealand was the worst thing that could have happened to French rugby because everybody thought everything was fine. Oh, we could have won the World Cup. Surely you don't want to shake everything up. Everything was already in pieces. And with Stade Français, it's the same thing. They won the title in 2015 against my team, Clermont. And they were already in pieces. They just did it out of true heart. I think they were fifth in the league that season, you know? So it's not like, and they really just dug deep for the last three games with around Gonzalo Quesada and a young hot bunch of Rabah Slimani and Sergio Parisse and all those guys. But they were already massively in problem. The post Max Guazzini era was a disaster in terms of culture, of values, of mindset. Other teams were seriously getting professional. Paris is obviously a lot more complicated because everything that you want to try to build costs 15 times more than anywhere else. I believe they are back because they're backed with one of the wealthiest men in world rugby, which is the Capri Sun owner, you know, professional. I don't know if it's Wild or Wild, but obviously he's injecting a huge amount of capital in there, but capital isn't just enough. There's obviously the passage of my former Leicester Tigers coach, Hanneke Meyer, who unfortunately damaged seriously the culture and the values of the club. It just wasn't the right fit for the right time. And that takes a toll on the club. It's one thing, you know, to have a bad season, but then your players leave, your sponsors are not happy, the press doesn't see you the same way. It takes a long time to rebuild. So now with Thomas Lombard as sort of director of operations, Gonzalo Quesada, director of rugby, and some good French talent right in the middle there, I think they will be back on the rise. They're heading in the right direction.
Mm, well, that's great news. It really is. It's some of the sort of great European trips to go across and just see them under Max put on a show. It was just like a show like no show you'd ever seen before. I remember at Stade when they played Harlequins and at Stade de France, and they had guys on horseback with in armour. You know, charging up and down the side of the pitch. You can imagine at Twickenham, the groundsman would have been topping himself at the sight of horses churning up his turf. But it was part of the big show, and it was just great to see.
Do you not think, Ben, that you could bring that sort of thing to Tunbridge Wells?
Hey, I've got a really cute story. Is that I got this house about a year ago that we're transforming, and we had a really big problem with a super heavy steel beam. and we just can move it because a crane can come in or whatever. We had big issues. And on the Monday, I get a message from the Tom and Joel's coach, who's like, "Oh, I just saw that you arrived in the area. If you ever need anything, let me know." And I was like, "Well, you don't try, you don't get." So I texted him back, "Well, actually, if your front five is not doing anything, I've got a 1.1 ton metal, steel beam to move, and that would really help me." And fair play to them. On the Wednesday at 5 to 9, there was 10 blokes in front of my, it was pouring down rain, and there was 10 blokes in front of my house, and we moved that steel beam, that got it where we needed to be. And so after that, I said, "Oh, listen, next training, I'll come up, I'll pay a round of beers or something." And now I coach the forwards from time to time. So they lured me in and they got me. So the plans are not to get to the Premiership. The plans are not to have horses charging down the pitch line, Tunbridge-Wells, but there's a fantastic rugby club that we're going to try to take in the right direction.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Ben, final question. When you agreed to come on this show, did anyone mention God or Goddess of the Week to you?
No.
Okay. Well, listen, you've got about 30 seconds to think, because we traditionally at the end of the pod do... we all name our favourite person of the week, which we call the God or Goddess of the Week. So I'll let you scratch your head for a minute and turn to Chris.
Yeah, well, I've got two. One, I just want to mention her try for Harlequins in the semi-finals against Wasps. Jess Bridge scored a try that if England give the same short ball on a line that she ran to Johnny May, boy, would they transform their rugby. It was just wonderful to watch. And if you haven't seen it on YouTube, get out, have a look at that. Jess Breach scoring for Harlequins against Wasps. She was very close to being my goddess of the week. But my god of the week is that I love a good cover tackle. I love a guy who's prepared to go that extra mile just to put his body on the line. And Jeffrey Dumaru's tackle on Chesyn Kolbe, that is just, I think it's sublime. It was just wonderful. It summed up the guy, didn't it? He would not give up. And going back to Ben, what you said about, you give everything for your team. Boy, did he give everything for his team in that tackle. It was just wonderful.
Very good. I'll give you mine, which is well done to Steve Borthwick for returning Leicester to something where we want Leicester to be. He doesn't dazzle us off the pitch, but what he's done to that club in returning it to some kind of a prominence. And you knew from the way that they lost that final on Friday night by just the 1 point that was only the foothills of where he wants to take him. So I have him as my God of the Week. Over to you, Ben.
It's not so much on one particular thing that you think. I could have mentioned, so it's going to be a Toulouse guy. I could have mentioned Josef Atekori, which is my former... mate from Castres, the big, massive Samoan second row, who's such an absolute legend of a bloke, the life and the soul of a changing room, who stole the touch flag from post, from Tukenem, and he was using it as a flag and stuff. And I'm telling you, that touch flag is in Toulouse, because I received some pictures and he's celebrating with it. And it's just a cute, funny moment of, you want guys to stay genuine, and he's 100,000% genuine and really kind. But my God of the Week will have to be Jerome Kano, because I think the humility and the legend status really comes when you're able to be a legend in more than one country, in more than one team. And I know for a fact that in Toulouse, everybody absolutely adores him. He is down to earth, very relaxed, two-time World Cup winner, who gets to Toulouse and is asked to play second row because they're missing out, and played without even... blinking, and played four or five times second row. And now he's going to bow down or leave the game at the end of the season. And he just won the Champions Cup, and he's 38. He's got nothing to prove to anyone. And he's absolutely killing it by just a legendary status and a legendary way of behaving. So he would be my God of the Week.
That's too good for me.
Ben, what a treat to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us. Chris, good to see you again as ever. Anyone out there who's listened to this podcast, thank you again for joining us. As you know, we will be back next week. Thank you for listening.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.